Welcome. Glad you all made it today. And my name is Weston Adams. Today, what we're going to be talking about is no spray orcharding on a budget. So we're going to be focusing on growing fruit for your homestead. It might be your school. It might be your whatever it is, maybe your family, your lifestyle center. And we're going to be talking about doing it on a budget. Before we get started, if you are here in person, some people are going to be listening to this online. If you're in here in person as part of the agriculture conference, hopefully you downloaded the handout. There was a handout that goes with this class. If you haven't downloaded it, we have a QR code we can throw up on the screen here, hopefully momentarily. And that is where you can go and go ahead and download it now, because some of the stuff I'm going to be talking about is on that resource list, the handout that goes with this class. For those of you who are viewing this later, I believe Audioverse will have the PowerPoints with this class. So whether you're viewing it on Audioverse or somewhere else, if you have the PowerPoints, I'm gonna put the class handout in the bottom of the PowerPoints, so you can access that if nothing else. Hold your questions to the end. That makes it easier for us to upload this for people to view later, listen to later, if all the questions are held to the end. And hopefully we'll get PowerPoints going here in a minute, but we won't hold out too long. So I wonder, have any of you looked at fruit tree prices lately? They've gone up. You can spend a lot of money on fruit trees. I was talking to a friend recently, and he was looking at prices. Well, actually, more what he was looking at is the availability of fruit trees. They sell out like that. And so when people feel uncertain, it seems like they want to invest in fruit trees for some reason. It brings some permanence. Now, the Bible does talk about a time when the powers that be are going to oppress people who are trying to think for themselves. And so I think that we shouldn't rely on our orchards necessarily, but I think that it's good preparation to be learning how to grow our own food, and fruit trees are definitely a part of that. So all these trees that are being sold, they are selling out. Nurseries are selling out, and these trees are going somewhere. People are planting them in their yards. But here's the interesting thing. If you were to follow most of those trees to the yards where they're planted and see, track them for a few years, see what happened to them. In the East, at least in Tennessee, Missouri, this whole eastern part of the U.S., you would find that a lot of those trees never end up producing much. Maybe you found that in your own orchard. So today I'm going to focus on two things. I want to focus today on why it is that these trees don't produce much in a lot of cases, and so why they don't produce much, how you can produce them. This is kind of three. Why they don't produce much and how you can produce them with no spray, and then second, how you can do that with very little money. How many of you live in the Southeast? Okay, pretty good percentage. If you live in the Southeast and if you've tried to grow fruit here, chances are you probably experienced some of the challenges. In this climate, we have high heat, we have high humidity, we have high bugs, we have high fungus, we have late frosts. Things really can gang up on you. Okay, I'm going to scroll through. Looks like I have PowerPoint now. There's the QR code if you need to pull up the handout. You can snap that real quick. Try to advance a little more. It's not going forward. You can manually advance it back there if that's easy enough. Okay. What I was going to show you is some pictures of... There we go. Okay, there's one. This is a nectarine tree. This is an example of some of the pests and diseases we deal with in this part of the world. The pictures might look beautiful in the catalog, but when you try to plant nectarines, peaches, plums, this is the kind of thing you get in this part of the world. Apples. They might look beautiful in the catalog, but we have a lot of pests and diseases. Fire blight, plum curculio, all kinds of stuff. This is a peach eaten up by brown rot. So why is it that in this area, fruit just don't do very well? More peaches. They were peaches. Well, if you think about it, all of our fruit, the peaches, the nectarines, the plums, whatever it is that we're used to eating, most of that is coming from drier climates. Think California, Western Washington, climates like that. And the grocery store has educated most of us. We're used to the stuff that the grocery store sells us, and so when we think, oh, I'm going to go plant a fruit tree, we naturally gravitate toward the stuff that we're used to buying. But when we buy that stuff, if we planted that stuff in California or if we planted that stuff in Western Washington, our story would probably be a little different. But when we try to plant that stuff here, we usually have problems. So there are several ways to deal with this. You can talk to your extension office and they will tell you how you can spray your trees. And I'm not down on spraying, actually. There are dangers to it, I believe, but if you choose to spray, at least you know what you're spraying. When you buy from the store, you don't even know what you're spraying. So if you choose to spray, that is a viable option, and I would contact your extension office to get the regimen for a particular crop. But what I want to talk about is how you can plant such that you won't have to spray. It's a little bit of a different paradigm, so that's what we're going to talk about today. Most of my experience personally has been in the humid Southeast, so that's partly why I'm catering to this area. And so I'm going to talk about a couple different fruits that I have seen in the East do very well without sprays. How many of you have heard of these? Yes. Now, if you live in this part of the world, you probably have seen these growing on trees. The ones I have up on the screen are actually Asian persimmons. They're Diosporus cacti is the Latin name. And they're grown throughout the Orient, China. They produce a lot of them there. In our area, we have Diosporus virginiana, which is the American persimmon. Perhaps you have tasted them green. They have a really strong astringency if you eat these guys green. In 2013, this is a little bit of my story, in 2013 through 2017, about in there, our family was planting a lot of fruit trees, and we planted everything. We planted apples, we planted peaches, plums, nectarines, we planted nuts, we planted persimmons, we planted figs, we planted everything. And of all everything we planted, this is one of the crops that has given us the biggest return. I would say this is the crop that has given us the biggest return, not one of the crops. I would say this is the one that has given us the biggest return. And these things require almost no spray. We've never sprayed. And I know many people who have never sprayed these. I talked about the different species. Diosporus virginiana, that's the one that we're used to seeing in the wild. It's very cold hardy. The wild persimmons can take down to about negative 20. So they're very cold hardy. They grow throughout most of the East, down into Florida, up into Illinois. The Asian ones, which are the ones you buy in the store, the big, you can buy the big flat ones, or you can buy the elongated Hichia is the name. They are both the same species, but they're Asian. Those are the Diosporus khaki. And here's the interesting thing. This is a relatively recent development, but breeders have actually crossed the two. So now we have varieties of persimmons that are half Asian, half American. And the goal with this is to get varieties that are cold hardy like the American and that produce fruit that are more like the Asian. So they have started developing those. It's still in its infancy a little bit, but they're making more crosses and they're developing a lot of those right now. Got a few more, another picture of these guys. That's one, that's a variety called Nikita's Gift. That's a hybrid persimmon you see up there. So I focus on these. They are one of my top picks. If you're in this climate and you want to get some trees going that really handle disease well, I would go with these guys. There is one thing, and talk to me more about it later if you want. There is something called sudden death syndrome that affects some of these guys. And I'm not going to go into it a lot here. Just stick it in the back of your mind. If you ever hear someone talking about it, it only affects the Asian varieties and the hybrids. So if you go with American varieties of persimmons, you bypass that altogether. If you go with the Asians or the hybrids, you're likely going to do fine. But there are some areas, specific areas, where people run into this issue that you should just be aware of. When we're done with this class, if you want to sample some persimmons, I tried very hard to get fresh ones. They're out of season. You can't get fresh persimmons. But I do have some dried ones up here. These persimmons don't have any sugar. They're not crystallized. They're not highly sugary. But if you want to give them a try, we're going to have toothpicks up here, and you're welcome to come give them a try. The second unusual fruit that I want to talk about is papa. This is another native, just like the persimmon. We find this growing. Its range actually overlaps the persimmon a lot. The pawpaw is a graceful understory tree in the wild. You'll find this is never going to be a dominating tree. You'll find this growing under other trees, big spreading leaves. It has a green fruit that's very unassuming. In fact, if you aren't looking for it, you'll probably miss it because it blends in with the foliage a lot. But if you ever get a chance to taste this fruit, you will be amazed. I'm going to raise my notes up here. Okay, so, you know, one question people often ask about this is, if it's a good fruit, why don't we see it in the grocery store? And we don't. You generally can't see these in the grocery store. But the reason is that pawpaws are highly perishable. If you pick a pawpaw and try to store it, you might be able to store it a few days in your house. If you try to ship it, the shelf life is going to plummet. They're like raspberries. They're more perishable than raspberries. So even though they are delicious, even though they grow well, you can't ship them. So you're not going to find something like this in the grocery store. But breeding in the wild, these fruits, you'll find fruits that are anywhere from 3 to 4 inches in length, maybe half that in width. Breeding has developed them to where you can buy varieties of pawpaw that are over a pound. They're more comparable to mangoes. Big, beautiful, custardy on the inside. If you've ever tasted one, or maybe you haven't tasted one yet, they're like a custard texture, almost like an avocado, but sweet and fruity. They're actually very delicious. If you decide to grow pawpaw, there are a few things you will want to know. Pawpaws, like persimmons, they do well with no sprays. No sprays whatsoever. Don't plan on very little maintenance if you're growing pawpaws. If you're growing pawpaws, I recommend that you purchase grafted varieties. You can grow seedlings, and seedling pawpaw trees will produce fruit. In fact, they'll often produce pretty good fruit, but if you get grafted varieties, you'll be able to get the biggest fruit, and you'll be able to get it the fastest. They require cross-pollination. If you want to get them going, make sure you have at least two varieties and plant them pretty close. These trees aren't big. They're an understory tree, so within the row, you can probably plant these guys 6 to 8 feet. Several varieties, you'll have good pollination. You've heard of the turtle and the hare? In that analogy, pawpaws would be the turtle. They're slow to establish, but they just keep going. So get them in the ground as soon as you can. There are others. I'm not going to focus on a whole lot more crops that you can grow with no sprays, but if you're interested in doing no spray culture, I would recommend pears. There are some excellent varieties of pears that in this climate will handle our diseases, handle our pests. If you talk to the locals, they'll usually tell you, you know, we tried peaches, we tried nectar, we tried all, the pears are the ones that do well. So in the handout, you'll find a list of varieties of pears that resist really the only disease we deal with in this area, and that's fire blight. If you can get pears that resist fire blight, then you have a really high chance of success. So look at the handout. I've actually got recommended varieties of persimmons and pawpaw and pears in there. Muscadines, that's another fruit that is native to much of the Southeast. I have some recommended varieties of muscadines in there. And yes, by planting these varieties that are native to this area or well adapted, you're going to start with a huge head start. I'm not discouraging you from experimenting, though. In fact, I would encourage you, plant some stuff just for fun, because you will learn a lot. But if you're able to invest from the get-go in stuff that has been proven, you'll save yourself a lot of time and money. Okay, I'm going to move on, and there's another pawpaw picture. I'm going to move on. I'll get there in a minute. I'm going to move on and talk about doing this on a budget. Not long ago, I had a friend who was planting an orchard, and he had a pretty large orchard. What he ended up doing is he dug big holes and spent, like, I think it was about $90 a tree. And in the market we have right now, you can do that pretty easily, because especially if you're trying to get large trees, there's a high demand, and that kind of stuff adds up very fast. So I want to talk about a few cost-saving strategies that you can use, where you can get going on a very small bit of capital. And the first thing I want to talk about is planning for the long haul. When I say planning for the long haul, I think growers, especially beginner growers, often think that they need to invest in large trees. They think that's going to get them ahead. But what I recommend is that people actually start small. When you invest in large trees, basically you're paying the nursery to grow your trees to that size for you. If you don't have good soil, if you have not put in the time and effort into picking a good piece, into developing that piece, then all that money that you spend paying the nursery to grow your tree is going to go down the drain. If you start with a small tree, actually, in most cases, you'll lose very little time, because a small tree transplants a lot better, it establishes a lot better, you'll be able to get that tree up, even catching up with the larger trees in a very short amount of time. And in the long run, you'll save a lot of money. So if you keep that mindset of letting time work for you instead of letting your dollars work for you or the nursery work for you, you'll save a lot of money. Another thing I emphasize is that if you're able to graft your own trees, that's something that will also save you funds. I'm going to be teaching a class on Friday, Lord willing, about grafting, and we're going to talk about how you do that, what the principles are. I'm going to be doing some live demonstrations. I'll even be, for those who've signed up, they'll get to participate. And so if you don't know how to graft, it's actually not as daunting as it sounds. It's fairly straightforward, something that most people can learn to do, and you'll save quite a bit of money that way. I'm going to talk real quick about something that I have utilized. I have a screenshot pulled up here from, this is the Missouri Department of Conservation. Different states have the equivalent. This one's Missouri, but you can get it from other states. State nurseries will often have a program where they'll sell you native seedlings, native tree seedlings. In the case of persimmons and pawpaw, you can get seedlings from various state nurseries. I've gotten them from Arkansas. I have some on order right now from Missouri. But check with your state. There you'll find these kind of organizations, and their mission is to get out trees for a reasonable rate so people can plant. I can usually get trees for about a dollar a piece from the Missouri Department of Conservation. And with persimmons and pawpaws, this ends up being a huge savings, because if I were to go out and buy those, buy a grafted tree, I'm looking at anywhere from $40 to $50 per tree. So if you're interested in getting especially these pawpaw and these persimmons going, check out your Department of Conservation. They sell out very fast, so you won't be able to get anything at this time of year, most likely. But if you mark your calendar, maybe check into their dates right now when their nursery reopens for ordering. Is it September? What state is that? Missouri? Okay. So check your local department and figure out when they're going to open up. And literally, I would be on there within a couple hours of opening so you can secure these. The way it is in Missouri is, I believe you have to go pick them up. Do they ship them? Okay. It may depend on which state, but it sounds like Missouri does ship. Okay. So this will be a huge cost saver. If you or your organization is wanting to plant a small grove of them, just put in an order, you know, order 20, 30, 40 trees, whatever you want. Get them planted. You can graft at any subsequent year in the future. So if you know you want to have 50 trees going, but you don't know what varieties you want, all you know is you want persimmons, just order the 50 seedlings. It's a small investment. Get them planted. They can grow for a year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it may be. And then once you've figured out, okay, I know what varieties I want, I know, you know, what pollination I need, whatever it may be, you can graft them at that point, and you really won't have lost any time, because the trees have been growing all along and they have all that root system established. So that's a way to save a lot of money. Now, the Department of Conservation, you may not be able to find like pears and apples from them. So if you're looking for more the popular fruits, which, like I was saying, in many cases, if you try to plant those, you're going to have some more issues. Pears do well. You know, apples, peaches, some of those, you're going to have a few more issues. Not impossible, but you'll have some issues. I recommend that you go to some of the nurseries that I have on the handout. There are some sources for rootstock. Again, these aren't grafted trees. These are rootstock. But there are wholesale nurseries out in Washington, Oregon, that'll be able to sell you rootstock for a couple dollars a stick. And you'll, in the same way with the persimmons and pawpaw, you'll get a long ways ahead by ordering that kind of stuff. And then basically, you're letting time work for you. You're getting a small tree, getting it in the ground, and letting time work for you rather than making this huge investment up front. So check out that list, the handout. Make sure you download that. If you can't get it, come talk to me, and you will save a lot that way. Plant trees that are disease resistant and trees that are native as much as possible. Do we have any questions? Questions and answers. I'll take some questions, and then I'll have you all come up and sample persimmons if you'd like. We've got one right over here. He was asking whether dormant spray affects the fruit, like a copper fungicide. I would say that mainly what you're doing is controlling disease, so in that way it affects the fruit, because otherwise you'll deal with disease on the fruit. As far as whether it affects the, you're talking about whether it gets in the fruit and it's contaminates the fruit? Well, you'd probably have to look into individual products and how close you're spraying them to harvest. That's what I would say about that. Because some of the dormant sprays are sprayed when there aren't any leaves on the trees. So with that kind of stuff that's sprayed without when there aren't any leaves on the trees, I don't think you're running a big risk at that point. Some of the later stuff, maybe so. Over here. How long till a young pawpaw seedling fruits out? That depends on whether it's an actual seedling or whether it's a grafted. A seedling, you're probably looking at, I would say, at least 8 years, 8 to 9 years. Pawpaw are, they're slow, they're slow and steady. If you get a grafted one, then it'll be faster, maybe 4 or 5 years. You might even taste some, yeah, a little sooner than that, but it'll still take a little while. Okay, question over here. He's wondering if you can graft a pawpaw to the crab apple. That was the first question, right? Let me address that one. No, the short answer is no. You've got to get pawpaw. Now, you can order pawpaw seedlings from the Missouri Department of Conservation or another Department of Conservation. You can order the pawpaw seedlings and graft them that way. The seedlings you order, you don't know what the genetics are going to be. They may produce nice fruit, they may not. But if you graft them, then you know you've got something good. And the second question? He's wondering whether it's easy to propagate wild pawpaws. It is, but I do it by seed. If you dig them up, they have a big taproot, and they don't transplant really well. So I would collect seeds, and then you're going to get fruit that was similar to the wild one, unless you graft over to something better. Okay, we'll go back here. That's true. Stratifying. What I do, the way I have done pawpaw seeds before, and it's worked well, is actually I wouldn't recommend freezing them. I'd put them in the refrigerator in some moist soil. If pawpaw seeds dry out, unlike your vegetables or whatever, they won't do well. You'll lose germination real fast if they dry out. So put them in loose soil, a little bit of moisture in it, and just keep them in the refrigerator over the winter. And then plant them in the spring. They've got a real deep taproot, so if you can plant them in a tall pot, you'll do better. And they'll usually come right up. Okay, right over here. Okay, she has some pawpaws and she was wondering if they like composted manure. I think that would be great. Yeah, I would. They need, you're in East Texas. You should have pretty good rain there. I would put compost around them and give them some nutrition. In the wild, pawpaws are understory trees, and when they're young, often a little bit of shade will help them. But as they get older, you're going to want full sun for the highest production. Over here. Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. He was wondering whether there's a place that sells cuttings to graft onto the rootstock. You talking about pawpaws? Anything. Okay. There's a man in Kentucky. His name is Cliff England, and if you look it up, it's England's Orchard and Nursery in McKee, Kentucky. He will sell you all kinds of persimmon and pawpaw cuttings. He's got a huge selection. He's a researcher, so he basically has a research farm. You know, a lot of his varieties are still in development. They don't even have names yet, some of them. But he'll sell you all kinds of stuff. So look up England's Nursery and Orchard, I believe it is. England's Orchard and Nursery in McKee, Kentucky. And he will he'll get you set up with pawpaw persimmon. Yeah. Back here. Okay, she says they have wild plums in their area. Does that mean domestic ones will do okay? You're in Oklahoma, right? Okay. There's a possibility. In our area, we have wild plums too. And the wild ones don't necessarily do well. They survive, but they still have some pests. And so when we plant the cultivated ones, the wild ones are kind of a harbor for the pests, and it spreads to the cultivated ones. So my guess is that you'd still run into some issues, but it's worth a try. You could graft onto the wild ones. We've done that in our area, and give it a try. Any other we've got back here? Okay, he was asking with pawpaws, how close are they to being true to kind? How, like if you plant the seed, are you going to get the same thing you save the seed from, right? Yeah. With pawpaws, they're a lot more close than most. So if you take an apple seed and you plant an apple seed, you're going to get something that's completely different from the parent in most cases. But if you save pawpaw seeds, it's not going to be the same. It's not going to be identical, but they tend to come pretty true. The genetics are fairly stable, and you'll see something that's going to be close. Okay, back here. Okay, he was saying that he's read that flies pollinate pawpaw blooms and that people will attract the flies by putting rotting meat around their trees, bring the flies in, and that helps with pollination. I have heard the same thing. And pollination is sometimes an issue with pawpaw. That's why if you plant your trees really close, you'll be better off. Like if you buy two trees to pollinate and you plant them, you know, 40 feet apart, you might have some issues. So I recommend that if you get multiple varieties, which you will need, you'll need multiple varieties to produce fruit, plant them real close. And so that the branches intertwine a little bit. That way you'll get a lot of pollen mixing and cross-pollination. Yeah, some people do. I've heard that some people do bring stuff in to attract the flies. I don't know if it's always necessary. In fact, I know it's not always necessary, but I've heard of it. I would plant mine within the row, 6 to 8 feet. Within the row, yeah.
How far apart between rows?
That's probably determined by what you need to get down the rows. You could do 12 feet, you could do 15 feet, something like that. As long as they're close within the rows and you have alternating varieties, then I think in most cases you're going to be fine. Let's see, were there any others? Yeah, I'll come back to you. He was saying, I mentioned muscadines. What about concords? In our area, well, where my parents live in Tennessee, concords, they get black rot. And so if you don't spray, you're going to still deal with disease. I think there are parts of the U.S. where that's not the case, but in our area, in Tennessee, muscadines, it's the difference between getting a crop and not getting a crop most of the time. Okay, one we had one over here. Okay, he was saying that his plum trees bloom early every year and they get killed by the frost, and some of the other trees don't. And he was wondering if there's a way to tell whether it's going to be a late bloomer or not. Is that what your question was? That's mainly a variety characteristic. In the descriptions, they'll often tell you whether they bloom late, early or late. Now, it has to do with chill hours too. If a tree has, chill hours are the amount of cold weather that a tree requires in order to perform correctly. So, like, I may have a peach tree and it'll say it needs 1,200 chill hours. That means that that peach tree, every winter, it has to have 1,200 hours between about 32 and 45, I believe it is. There's a range which triggers a clock in the plant. And it's amazing how the Lord made it. There's a clock that starts ticking in the fall, and that tree will start measuring the hours that it has below or in this range. Once it's met that quota, maybe it's 1,200 hours, whatever it is. Once it's met that quota, then if it warms up, that tree's going to bloom. If the tree has not met that quota and it warms up, it won't bloom because it doesn't feel that it's had its winter rest yet. So you'll look at a tree description, you'll see it'll say 500 chill hours, whatever, 600 chill hours, whatever it may be. If you have more chill hours, it's generally going to be a later blooming tree because it takes longer for it to reach that quota, if that makes sense. So that'll tell you a little bit too. But in the big picture, your peaches, your plums are going to bloom early. Persimmons tend to bloom late. Apples in our area bloom pretty late. So you'll get the feel from crop to crop. Okay. Yeah. She was asking if there's anything you can do for Japanese beetles. Don't hang your traps in your fruit trees. I know a lot of people buy the Japanese beetle traps and they hang them in their fruit trees, but those traps tend to attract the beetles. So really, if you have traps, you should hang them away from your trees so the beetles go away from your trees. Yeah, buy traps and give them to the neighbors. Aside from that, we haven't had a terrible issue with Japanese beetles. Does anyone here have a good solution for Japanese beetles? Okay. Yes, so he was talking about a product called Milky Spore, which is biological, and it attacks the Japanese beetle larva and disrupts the life cycle at that point. We actually spread that at our homestead in Tennessee. And our Japanese beetle problem has gotten to be less and less. So I don't know if I can attribute it to that or not, but it has gotten to be less and less. Over here. Okay, we have someone who's saying they use traps. And you don't put them in your trees, you put them away, is that right? Okay. Yes. Okay, so they make their own bags for the traps. Okay, just buy the lure. Okay, buy the lure and replace the bags with homemade rigs. Yeah, and you've had success that way. Okay, took several years. Okay, thank you for that. Okay, let's go over here. Okay, she was talking, I'm glad you said that. She was talking about an Asian fruit. I believe they're called Chinese dates, jujubes. That would be another one to have on your list for crops that will tolerate a lot of this stuff without sprays. I know, in fact, from what I've read, those are an excellent one for Texas because they can take drought. So if you're here in Texas, look into those. I think it's spelled J-U-J-U-B-E. Yes, I don't have those on the handout, but that's definitely something to look into. Right here? Yes, she was asking about the plum curculio. That is, that's a big issue in the East with plums, with peaches, nectarines, a lot of stuff. They have a product called Surround. It's a clay product. It's a refined clay. And that has been proven to deal with the plum curculios. You spray it, I believe you have to start just after bloom, and it basically coats your trees so they're white. It's a powdery, refined clay, but the beetles don't like it. So that works really well. You have to spray it. I mean, there's some maintenance to it, but it's completely non-toxic. So if you want to go that route, it's well worth the research. Yeah, over here. That one was brown rot. That was brown rot, the diseased one you're talking about, right? Yeah, he asked what the picture was I showed of the peach. Yeah, that was. Oh, you know, I believe that was plum curculio. I believe it was. Yeah. Okay, over here. Okay, that's a good point. He said, "What are the means for preserving pawpaw and persimmon?" I'm glad you brought this up. Don't dry your pawpaws. People have tried that, and for some reason, pawpaws make people sick when they dry them. They're a really meaty, custardy fruit. It's like avocados. So if you try to picture drying an avocado, it's like the fats and the oils in them grow something, and people get sick. So don't dry your pawpaws. I know people bake with them. I know they make different kinds of cooked goods with them. You'd probably be fine freezing them, but I know most people eat them fresh. So as far as pawpaw, I'm not aware of anyone who's doing like any large-scale preservation so far. Now, persimmons, the Japanese have a way they process them. They dry them. You can also freeze persimmons. If you leave them on the tree, they'll just hang there. It depends on the Asian ones. The Asian ones will sit and hang on the tree, and they'll freeze and thaw and freeze and thaw. So if you want to preserve them, you can pick them and just stick them in the freezer. And in most cases, you'll pull them out, and they'll be almost like you never froze them, just because they're made to withstand that freezing and thawing. So you can freeze them. That works well. Drying. That works well. So those are at least two main ones. Okay, yes. Yes. Okay. So you run them through a pulper, and you get the pulp out, freeze just the pulp, and that works well. Okay, thank you for that. Do we have any others? Any other questions? One over here. Okay, you're wondering how you should plant them, whether there is a better way or a worse way to plant them. Are you talking about a certain crop or just in general? Okay. Yes. If you can do the 3-foot by 3-foot hole, I recommend it, but a lot of people can't. It's a lot of work, especially if you're doing big scale. So if you only have limited time and energy or money, whatever it may be, I would focus on the soil in general, as far as taking soil samples, seeing what you've got there, put a lot of selection up front into orchard site, because that's going to have long term implications as to how your orchard does, where you choose it. But a 3-by-3 hole, it's the tree's only going to stay in that hole for like a year. So the first year, you might get a whole lot of growth, but if you haven't addressed the soil beyond that, then it's like planting in a 3-by-3 pot. So I think it's good, but I wouldn't use that method to replace addressing the whole soil as a whole. If that makes sense. Okay. Back here. He's saying get an auger, 3-foot auger, and do holes in 10 seconds. Yeah. He's heard that if you prune later in the winter, right, that the heavy pruning will make the tree bloom later and be more tolerant to frost. I know that pruning in general decreases cold hardiness just as far as overall tree cold hardiness. I don't know if it delays blooming. That'd be something to check into. Okay, in the back. Okay, don't use the auger if you have clay soil. Okay, yes. Yes. Okay, over here. Okay, he was wondering if there is a schedule, if I have a schedule that of trees you can plant, basically a little package of trees that you can plant that will give you fruit throughout the year. Is that different types? Yeah, that's true. I think you have to work with what grows well in your area, depending on how much management you want to do. Within persimmons, I've seen persimmons ripen in August, and I've picked them as late as December 27. So that's a pretty big span if you get the right varieties. With pawpaw, I think the earliest I've heard of is you can get varieties that'll ripen in July. Then they're going to go through October. There's going to be variations within each variety. You just look at the varieties and push the envelope on both ends. But to some extent, you're just going to have to work with the crops that will do well. And if you're willing to spray and do that kind of management, then you've got more options. But I will say that a lot of these crops will push the envelope, like the persimmons. You can push the envelope quite a ways. Yes. Okay, he was saying, would I recommend planting early bloomers on a north or east slope to delay blooming? Yeah, if you can, a north slope will delay blooming. Probably even more important than that is to plant on a hill. Because if you have early bloomers, you plant them up on a hill. If you take a thermometer on a spring morning when you're getting those late spring frosts, all that cold air goes down. So if you measure the temperature in the valley and on the hill, don't be surprised to see a 10-degree difference in some cases, just because of that cold air drainage. So if you're able to plant your trees up on the hill, find some good soil up there. Sometimes the soil isn't as good up high. But if you can find some good soil and plant up there, you'll give yourself a big advantage as far as the frosts. Let me take one more. Was there one back here? What was that? Okay. I do not personally have experience with that. Does anyone else have experience using, I didn't quite catch the term you used, but basically interplanting to control pests? Okay, guilds. So is that like using plants that deter pests with like the marigold concept? Oh, not creating a monocrop. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think that in general, that's a good principle. Most of us don't grow on a large enough scale to create a monocrop, unless you're selling commercially. But I think it's definitely a good principle. Thank you for bringing that up. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and close here officially. I want you all to come up if you'd like. We've got some toothpicks up here, and I think Jasmine's going to help me. So you can taste these persimmons. You're going to find the whole spectrum with persimmons. These ones are not terribly sweet. I didn't know what they were going to taste like, but my dad, this fall or last fall, he was eating some of our persimmons. They were so sweet that he ate 7 of them. And it hit his bloodstream so fast, he had to go lie down. So they're really good. You'll just find the whole spectrum. So come on up here. Let me say a quick prayer as we close, and then come up here and feel free to sample. Heavenly Father, thank you for giving us not just food, but variety and stuff that's fun to grow. Please give us wisdom as we grow it. In your name, amen.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.